Our next speaker is Len Lazarus. Len is the editor and publisher of MarylandReporter.com, a site that has won numerous regional and national awards and is, in my opinion, the best news source on state politics here in Maryland. Before that, he was the State House Bureau Chief for the Baltimore Examiner, still stopped publishing in 2009. Before that, in the 80s, he was the State House Bureau Chief and political editor for Patuxent Publishing, which was a chain of 13 daily. He served as an editor for the Washington Post, Business Monthly, Trustee Quarterly, Patuxent Publishing. He was the senior associate producer on Maryland Public Television in 1997 for their State House hearing, and he's a regular commentator on the ReportersRoundtable.com and other different talk shows. Please welcome Len Lazarus.
So my assignment here today, what Bob asked me to do, was to talk about how libertarians should get more continuing coverage in the news. But first of all, and this is a little dangerous, but I'm going to trust you, I'm not a very ideological person, which probably accounts for the fact that if you go on my website, I'm a 501c3 organization designated by the IRS, and you can give me money, and it's tax deductible. That is, you can give MarylandReporter.com money, not if you would like to give me cash, that would be fine. If you go on my website, you can see people of various persuasions. I mean, my contributors include Rick Batts and Tom Schaller. Actually, I haven't put Tom up yet. He was recent. There's a testimonial from him of people of the right and left. And one of the things that I've always done throughout my career is give voice to the voiceless. And who is more voiceless than the Libertarian Party? I like underdogs. People who have a different point of view than the established point of view, and that's why I'm actually the word friend has now been so debased by Facebook. You know, you're either a friend or not a friend. We had this discussion at a Society of Professional Journalists conference some years ago, and it's like, well, you know, you're either a friend or you're not a friend. Peter Franchot is not actually a friend, but we like each other. And I, during that campaign, you know, he's the controller, he takes your state money now. But during that campaign, you know, that way, you know, there was William Donald Schaefer, and there was
Janet Owens.
Thank you, Janet. I had the Janet, but I was trying to remember the last name. And you know, and Peter was an afterthought. And one day I spent 2 hours with him alone in his house, except for his Labrador, or was it a Golden Retriever? In any case, big dog. There was so just the two of us. We had a long conversation. I eventually wrote about it, and it was like, and I actually paid attention to him during that campaign. And then lo and behold, he frickin' won, you know. And so, what happens in those situations is they remember who you are. You know, they remember that when. You know, Franchot would tell a story about, you know, what he would call up his mother and tell her about the campaign. And he'd say, oh, Petey, you know, his mother didn't think he was going to win the race. So it's one of the reasons that I've always paid attention to libertarians, Greens, whatever, because you bring another point of view. The other reason, and this is and this is where you could get me in trouble. Nobody asked. Dems will presume that I'm Republican because I give Republicans more attention than typical mainstream media will, because Republicans can't be dismissed because they have no voice. So I have this little official government card. Well, that's actually my grandson Noah. that's not what I'm about to show you. I think it's a real irony that I carry around this official government card, voter notification card, that says my party is libertarian. I'm here to really talk about state politics, but I'm a libertarian because of war. It's that both the major parties are war parties. I don't know where you come from and why you are libertarian, but that's why I'm a libertarian. In addition to believing in free market principles, so you know, all the wars. I believe the last speaker talked about the war on drugs. What insanity. We have 25,000 people in our prisons in Maryland, and half of them are there because of drug conviction, you know? What insanity is this? And we're still in Afghanistan. Isn't it amazing? You know, you can believe in American exceptionalism. You've heard of that term before. You know, American exceptionalism. You know, that America is special and great. And I believe that it is so. But America is not really exceptional when you go into Afghanistan and you stay there. Persians, British, Russians. Well, you want to go through all those people that, where Afghanistan has become a morass. It was one thing, I mean, I'm not sure I actually supported, but one thing to go and say, okay, we're going to take out Al-Qaeda and then get out. But we never get out. We go and we stay. So I'm going to stop talking about my personal beliefs to talk about, first of all, the party, the Libertarian. I guess I didn't turn off my buzzing BlackBerry here. The Libertarian Party needs to be obviously larger than, what is it, six tables in a little room in Dundalk, and it has to have more than a couple people of color and a couple Hispanics. It needs to be a broader movement, but in order to become a broader movement, it has to somehow appeal to mainstream people who are uncomfortable. I mean, you know how there are liberal Democrats who are really upset with Obama because he hasn't gotten out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, the war is over in Iraq, and we only have 50,000 troops. That's tremendous. But there has to be some kind of way to persuade them. And I think a way, the problem with the Libertarian Party is it seems to like disappear between elections, and it has no visibility. In Annapolis, for instance, have any of you ever testified in Annapolis on a bill about anything? Well, Spear Lancaster is kind of the exception here. Lorenzo and Susan and a few other people. When you go, I don't know whether, and frankly, I don't know about the rules, but do you identify yourselves as libertarians when you do that? Okay. I think there are some selective issues where you could ally yourself, particularly if you were able to ally yourself with with Democrats as opposed to Republicans. As you know, there's a whole the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, as a matter of fact, are these large umbrellas covering immense rifts within the party about what they believe. And within the Republican Party, as you know, there is a libertarian wing that does not buy into the social conservative let's control the private aspect of your lives, and who are really committed to free market principles and things like that. And there are these evolving coalitions that you could establish with people, but as you well know, and I don't have to tell you this, that Maryland is not very friendly to libertarian points of view. I mean, and the biggest problem I have with Democrats or mainstream media is that libertarians are right-wing wackos. Well, we have these really narrow definitions of right and left, right wing. You know, are libertarians conservative? I think it's very difficult to describe a libertarian as conservative in almost any fashion. And right wing is so nondescriptive that there needs to be a way for libertarians to identify with mainstream things. Like there are a lot of liberal Democrats, and let me say Kurt Anderson is one who believes that the war on drugs is insanity, and it has brought so much pain to so many people. I mean, if you believe, you know, if you believe in free market principles, and you say, okay, you have this large population that comes from dysfunctional families, they go to bad schools, they don't have good family structure, they don't have a lot of schools, and you say, well, what kind of business should I go into? I can barely read and write, but there is a local, very entrepreneurial business that I could get into, and that is selling drugs on the street corner. It's very logical, and because you want to get at the core of the problem, we have these enforcement folks that arrest the sellers and put them in prison, and the buyers of the drug, because it's always consumers that drive markets. I mean, you can't have a market without willing buyers. And I'm not suggesting that we ought to arrest people who buy drugs as well, marijuana. I mean, we're actually getting close to having a market in marijuana. I mean, this movement to medical marijuana is a slow step to say, let's legalize this thing and recognize that all kinds of people, you know, poor, middle class, rich, use this drug in certain ways, much as we use alcohol. And we have this, you know, look, we have this bar thing, but of course we can't smoking here. We have this bar thing, and it's heavily regulated by the state. Well, you know, let's set up a process where you can do the same thing with drugs. I'm talking to libertarians. I mean, you know, if I was talking to a bunch of Democrats, they would go, what kind of wacko are you? I'm talking to libertarians, so I'm speaking freely. Do I write this way? Well, not particularly, because it's not, you know, it's not where the discourse is happening. But to get more attention, to be more respected, the party has to become part of that discourse and choose those topics where the libertarian point of view coincides with other things that are happening out there in the culture. There are, you know, the problem with natural allies, for instance, let's say the American Friends Service Committee, is because of the Friends, the Quakers, they are consistently, adamantly, purely anti-war. Because of their other social things, they would have problems with libertarian positions on things relating to how much the government should do to help people. But if they're not a potential alliance with the Friends, with the Quakers, who are also seen as kind of fringe, I really, you know, maybe because of my own bias, that, you know, I really think that people are fed up with war. But as you well know, what happened, we went from a condition where all kinds of young men were very conscious that they were going to be sucked into a war and therefore got upset with it, and we've now gone to this mercenary force that can be sent all over the world, and it doesn't impact anybody but that small class of people that joined in with that. So, you know, and perhaps you all could come up with some other ideas about those things where you could become part of the mainstream dialogue and express points of view that people would say, well, gee, that makes a lot of sense. Much as, you know, it's interesting, this thing that Rand Paul has done, able to stay within the Republican Party, but clearly not well liked by most of the other Republicans, maybe because of the things like, well, you know, you're against the war, or are you against the troops? No, I mean, how is it? How is it unpatriotic? How is it more patriotic to say, let's send you guys over into a place, you guys and gals, over into places where you're in harm's way and you're killing people and being killed, and that's more patriotic than saying, come home, protect our borders, protect our interests. You don't have to go around the world killing people to maintain our empire. We can maintain our empire with free market approaches and other kinds of things. I don't say many things out loud. My wife is well aware. I was in the Vietnam War. I was a conscientious objector. I didn't have to serve because Nixon went to the fabulous number system, and I pulled the 275 or something like that, and I wasn't in danger of being drafted after I went through, you know, my U.S. And I was in the seminary, and my 4D, and then my 2S, and then my 1A, and then my 1O, and all the wonderful things about conscription. I know as libertarians you all believe in conscription is a good idea, right? so that we can maintain a large military. And that was the thing, you know, I have a problem with this greatest generation idea, not because they weren't great people, and my father, who's still alive, Purple Heart, 00 Cluster, Bronze Star, Leyte, big, that 96th Infantry Division was shot by the Japanese three times. I mean, not just like wounded, successful, but World War II, as you know, established the empire. It's called the American century because it was the American century. Everybody was obliterated, and we still had a growing economy, and now we're experiencing the results of it. I'm going to stop talking about that kind of stuff because I'm talking about the kind of things, the reason that I'm a libertarian. I think on the state level, it's much harder to identify those issues on which libertarians could actually agree. You know, there was an old joke that I think Will Rogers said it, but, you know, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat, but that would be particularly true if he's a libertarian. I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a libertarian. I don't know is because some of the issues, for instance, how do you all feel about this gay marriage thing? You folks have.
They should be as miserable as the rest of them.
Lorenzo.
Well, I'm very troubled by letting government define marriage. In fact, government had in the past defined marriage so that people who were different ethnic backgrounds and races could not marry not that long ago. In fact, in Virginia, I think it was 1967 or even 7 before they overturned it. I think marriage should be defined by the faith communities, families, and individuals. Everyone should uphold the contractual relationship between two consenting adults. And that's the way this whole thing should be approached. When it gets to this point, I feel like even though I think that people who happen to be of the same sex want to have a marriage-like approach, then it's government defining it. And when government defines it, government can take away it.
Right. And so I want to hear from other folks about this, but the problem, therefore, with the civil union approach is that marriage has become so enshrined within the law that it's all over the place and intertwined, and the gay objection to civil union, which I think probably a lot of you would support, and let's say, you know, as Alan Kittleman said, you know, let's define the whole thing as civil union. And marriage is a religious thing, and civil union is this contractual relationship that the state recognizes and has certain privileges. The problem with that is you would have to go in and change so many different aspects of the law to give civil unions the same right that has been enshrined through marriage over the years.
You know, that argument has to do with religion, and America is always constantly changing. You know, culturally, we have immigrants, and my answer to that is don't take away my hamburger, because there are some religious groups that don't eat beef, and there could be some day where that group is the majority, and based on their religious beliefs, they could say, you can't eat beef. So I don't think there's any place in that. Whether it's eating a hamburger or getting married, if it's your own personal religious experience to get married in your own church, whatever church that is, then you're married. Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't get married in church. A lot of people just the civil ceremony they get sort of before.
Well, sir, there's a side of this that hasn't been brought up yet. The reason that this whole issue comes up is not because gay people want to be as miserable as straight people. Because the law in recent years has given certain privileges to married people that other people who are not allowed to marry want to participate in.
Right.
The problem is not the institution of marriage, which whether you believe it's God-given or whether it's part of a spontaneous order, is something that did not come from the state. The state has appropriated it in order for certain political purposes. And there's an attempt now to, for other people, understandably, to want to get in on those benefits. And I think that it goes back to the heart of a libertarian principle. There should be no special privileges for people. We should have, you know, equal rights. And therefore, what the movement for gay marriage is asking for is not for equality of rights, but for a share of these special benefits.
I think that's accurate. That's not the way it's phrased. But then, you would say, you know, does the state not have an interest in promoting family life and the welfare of children?
If two people, you could very easily have. I'm very much involved with the charter school.
Yes.
And I'm very much involved with this. We're taking money from our school system. Because these are students, and if you live in Anne Arundel County, you can fall for a mirror, you can apply. The same thing should be, if you want to support children, you could support, if money goes to the child, not to the marriage. A child, if you have custody of a child, and this kid wants to give them $2,000 a year for general health reasons or whatever benefits, give it to the child from their 18. It doesn't have to be with marriage. You could be single. You could be never married. I could be a single mom. We do it every day. We got single moms here in Baltimore City. 70% of them are not married.
Yeah. The whole problem with this man-woman thing is we know how unsuccessful that is in a lot of areas, you know, and divorce and single parents. People who are not married, so the state has not done a very good job with marriage.
Let's address your more general point about us libertarians. You imply that we should identify issues that we can testify on or make contributions, as if I took you to suggest that we have problems in finding such issues, whereas my experience has been as an economist, I mean, I can give you a position, a pre-market position on 100, 200 issues easily, and I testified before the Congress. And I've seen this on Capitol Hill, and I don't know about that. I may phrase this in terms of a question about Maryland politics. They're not interested in the pre-market issue. Politicians, they don't want to hear it. So the minute they get wind that basically you're going to argue the free market position, the classical free market, I mean, neither the Republicans or the Democrats, the people in power, don't want to hear it. So you're not going to be invited. So how does one, you know?
Well, see, in Annapolis, you're talking at the congressional level. I'm talking, the task that I was given was, how can the Libertarian Party get more attention for itself in its media?
Exactly.
The difference with Annapolis is it's actually a fairly open process to testify.
Yes.
Unlike Capitol Hill,
yes.
those are staged events when you
right.
go up and
that's
testify.
True. That's correct.
In Annapolis, you can show up, and I'm suggesting. I mean, I don't know whether this would work. My suggestion would be that libertarians, explicitly libertarian, testify on things that they consider part of their core values, and particularly if you want more attention and more credibility. I know a lot of you don't think that you need more credibility, but if you're looking for, I'm trying to get suggestions where mainstream media might say, oh, these people are not as wacko as I think they are, as long as they're called, you know, libertarians, that the war on drugs has so many implications. You know, we could save so much money for taxpayers if we weren't incarcerating all these people because they were selling and illegal substances. We've kind of gotten all over the place. You doing okay, Bob?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Can you offer advice? I'm sorry. One more question on how to actually do it. If you have specific advice, if somebody wanted to set up a form in Annapolis,
well, I mean, there are all kinds. We only have 4 weeks left in the session, so the hearings are largely have taken place. I mean, there will continue to be hearings. What I was suggesting as a long-term thing, so that the Libertarian Party is not every 4 years suddenly, oh, here are Libertarian candidates for this, that, and the other thing, that the Libertarian Party, it would be helpful to find some place in Maryland where you could actually get a Libertarian elected to something or other. And I think there are actually members of the Republican Party who in their core values are Libertarian, but would not want to be associated simply because they think they couldn't get elected. You know, I can get elected as a Republican in this area with my Libertarian values, but I couldn't get elected as a Libertarian if I was flat out Libertarian. A couple of people who I haven't spoken to here.
But one of them I use your demerit system. If your answer to that question is something should privatize, no state statute should ever mention anyone's status as merit. People can do whatever they want. The government should be able to if you say something like that, a lot of people have the reaction to say, well, that's not on the table now. That's not one of the two times. Therefore, you're irrelevant and I won't come. That's option number one. Option number two is, thanks to gerrymandering, there are many, many parts, specifically most, where there's not a horse race. And because of the overwhelming strength of the journalists for horse race, if you don't have a realistic chance to win, you don't get covered in your advertising. I was prepared not to get the coverage that the Republican got in my district. But actually, I got exactly the same as the Republican got. It was zero. Chris Van Hollen,
the whole coverage,
and no one got coverage. He was on every network.
He was a Libertarian candidate.
On every network every day, talking about all the other people running and all the other things. But nobody around here could be bothered to ask him his position on anything. And as a result, now the Ranger Democrat, the Republican Democrat, is a guy about whom we know nothing.
Well, you got your name in some voters' guides, right?
I'm sorry.
Didn't you get your name in some voters' guides?
Yeah, sure.
Didn't George Wilman? So what are you complaining about? That is a problem, and that's why I describe myself that is covering underdogs that is not generally seen as a productive thing. I think that's what journalists ought to do. I'm not saying that, I didn't give an awful lot of coverage to libertarians, but I did actually pay attention. And I was thinking of Maria Allwine, who was at Green Party, and I think she may have had more credibility by staying involved in the kind of issues that she's involved in. I mean, she doesn't go away between elections. She's involved in other stuff. Not saying that I agree with her, but in terms of maintaining your visibility. But I wanted to go back to your first point. How exactly would you privatize marriage? What do you mean by privatizing marriage? By
the state doesn't grant you a marriage, and the state doesn't convict you of any state justice on the basis of whether you're married.
If you folks want to discuss that, that's fine with me, but it just seems to be go against the institution of marriage and what it involved in terms of property rights goes way, way back in terms of our legal institutions. And that's why there are deeds. When I was in high school, I worked in land surveying, and you know the deeds often would say Bob Johnston at Books. UX period is the abbreviation for Uxor, which is wife in Latin. And so many of things, the state got involved in marriage and family partly because of property and how property is transferred and who owns it.
Despite all that, marriage was unregulated by the state until the mid-1920s. The tradition of civil marriage is one of the pilgrims brought here because they had gone to the Netherlands and found that they did it that way there, and they were all thrown out because they didn't like going to the Church of England for it. So it's a reaction against religion on the soul, but we actually don't live in a society where we need to rebel against religious control of that. Whether people put it in their private views, that's up to them. But I'm reacting against the state saying, for example, that the taxes are there. We all know people who decide not to get married because they're costing their own life. Or whether you have children or not, all of that stuff.
Why should your tax rate be different? But you're clearly much more informed on history and background.
I didn't get married with the hopes that I would get any benefit.
That's not why I did.
Somebody we haven't heard. Did you want to wait?
First of all, to answer your question, hearings in Annapolis are different than the U.S. Congress. So, if you want to testify on a bill, and many of us here have, what you do is you go to the committee room on the day the bill is being heard, and you sign up on the sign-up sheet for that bill, and they call your name, and you get up, and you say what you have to say. It's in the U.S. Congress, the testimony is invited. Here, just go and sign up for it. One area I want to mention is that you talk about, two things, about the war and about the staying involved in issues between elections. And one big area that I would really like to see more libertarians get involved in is an area I'm active in, and that is anti-war activity. I'm the treasurer of a national anti-war group, Voters for Peace. A member of active in the local chapter of Veterans for Peace, and I'm well known as a libertarian. And I'll tell you, the peace movement is totally dominated by progressives on the left. I mean, we stand out like a sore thumb. You know, it's the libertarians. There are so few of us that we are highly visible, and I think putting forward our own anti-war views. You know, attracts, I know the libertarians, they're as anti-war as we are. And, I get into dust-ups with all these progressives from time to time about different views. We just had Veterans for Peace, the national group, just issued a statement supporting the labor unions in Wisconsin, which has nothing to do with veterans or with peace. But it's a progressive issue, and they mix all these issues together. Mm-hmm. And we want to get in there and say, you can be against the war without being a progressive. There's a lot of them. We're now, another group I'm in, we're forming a new left-right anti-war coalition that some of you may want to get involved in. It's called Come Home America. And you listen to people like Pat Buchanan. He says, you can't cut the... entitlements because the Democrats won't go for it. You can't cut the defense spending because the Republicans won't go for it. You can't raise taxes, Republicans won't go for it. The only thing you can do is cut the wars. Get rid of the wars. That's the only way to balance the budget. So we got to bring this in. What happened with the peace movement illustrates the danger of monoculture. You got all progressives in there. Obama got elected, the peace movement collapsed. We need a much broader peace movement than just people on the left. You know, monoculture is leaving you highly vulnerable, whether it's the Irish potato famine or Detroit's economy. You know, you're highly vulnerable if you rely on only one thing. So we need a much more diverse peace movement. There's a lot of opportunity for it in for libertarians, and I was really, we have a few, we have Adam Kokesh, we have Justin Raimondo, they're not very many of us in here. We're all highly visible, and I would urge you, if you're looking for an issue to get involved in, get involved in the anti-war movement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You agree?
Yes, sir.
Well, I want to start by agreeing with that testimony is true, not just because of the reasons he gave, but also to put pressure on other people on the right, because the Tea Party should be anti-war.
Right.
And after all, their number one issue is the debt, is the deficit. And there is no way, no way you're going to solve
the
that problem.
The debt and the Constitution. Why should they be in favor of foreign wars?
And on the Constitution, too, that you know, the war is unconstitutional. No declaration of war was made. That's just a fact. And it's impossible. It's totally illegal to conduct these wars.
And the, I mean, as you're well aware, I mean, you know, you're well-read people. You know, the use of war to take away other liberties. War is constantly used as a justification to take away other liberties from you. The Patriot Act. Is it unpatriotic to oppose the Patriot Act?
Well, of course it's not.
You know, the Patriot Act is one of those sham things, you know. You slap on something that takes away liberties and you call it patriotism.
I wanted to get back to the state issues, though.
Yes.
It's a little more complicated, because when you get to the state issues, it can't be a hard core. If you want to find an issue, you're going to form a coalition with. Whereas on the war, we can form a coalition with a lot of people and be very hardcore. On the state issues, I think people tend to think, well, it's less interesting. But I want to encourage people to write articles, not just for your website, but some of the most successful candidates have been people who started out as columnists. Steve Ziegler, who did win his bid for school board in Charles County, started out as a columnist who wrote libertarian positions on education. Jerry Schneider, who did not win his race for state representative, but who did better than any of our candidates up to that point, had been writing columns for a newspaper in Montgomery County. So this is something that we can all do. If your expertise is in economics, these local newspapers are hungry for material. They want people who can write well to write for them, and what their exact position is not as important to them as getting something that they can fill up and put advertising.
But particularly if you could take a local issue, yeah. I mean,
but
this is an area where I was in community newspapers for a long time. You can take a local issue and give that point of view. But as you say, as you get the lower down you get, the more what is the libertarian point of view on transportation? Okay, well, privatize all the roads. I don't think that's going to happen. But there is some kind of middle ground there where you could express maybe, and actually transportation is, and roads is a pretty good example where the state does indeed privatize most of what it does in that area. The state contracts out.
That's an opportunity. I'll take an example of transportation in my own county, Montgomery County. One of the hottest issues in my neighborhood is the Purple Line. And I'm one of the few people who can write an article. You see people write articles against the Purple Line, but their arguments are usually environmental or something like that. I'm the one who will put in an article saying, this is going to be counterproductive, because what you're doing is that you are going to enhance the value of development. This is a subsidy for developers at the general taxpayer expense. I'm sure you'll agree with that. It's economy. So that's the kind of artist.
Come on, this is smart growth. You're in favor of dumb growth?
There's nothing smart about it. Again, it's a Hayekian point of view, which may be a little bit subtle. But,
yeah,
but the argument is nothing smart about it to subsidize the rich at the expense of the general public.
Mm-hmm. And we do, we do a lot of that, of course.
Yes. Getting back to what you started off earlier, about how do we get in the general topic or debate about what to do and set priorities? Since the Maryland Constitution is already set up to, you don't have, you can't set green energy up by.
We don't have all the things. All the things that the people out west. I'm part of a group called Capital Beat, and national organization of state house reporters and editors. And the guy put out a question on the listserv saying, which of your states have tax initiatives coming up? Now, I don't reply to any of this because, you know, people out west when they say, we don't have initiative. We don't put bomb bills on the ballot. We don't have recall. The right to referendum is severely restricted. It's very difficult to have any kind of direct democracy here. Perhaps, you know, those are certainly issues where a lot, perhaps, maybe there's a coalition. And I preempted what you were about to say.
Okay, just so that everybody knows that, you know, the base philosophy is you elect representatives, they were sent to make laws and pass budgets, therefore let them do their job, et cetera. Other than they get highly controlled by special interests, big business, whatever, the unions and everything else, so that you basically are, ideas get very well, you know, cut off very fast, thrown in a dark box so they never see the light of day, and, you know, we just don't have a debate about what's good or what's not. And, you know, until we could basically change the Maryland Constitution, you know, we're kind of in this hole that we can't even dig ourselves out of. And then to begin with, you know, we're never.
But which part of the Constitution would you change?
Well, I mean, should you have referendums and,
the problem with things like initiatives is that they were initially, you know, part of the progressive movement, not leftists calling themselves progressives, the old progressive.
We're going to have a very specific here. Mentioned Mark over here. Gerrymandering is a terrible situation. We can present a problem here and say, look, let's make this, like, we just know Maryland districts are Senator 3, House delegates. What's wrong with saying have a House of Delegates, single member district, and we could propose, and if you look, what's the state?
That was proposed by the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if we would propose, this is what our map would look like if it was 10 parts fixed. Here it is.
Yeah.
Could we even have an issue? Say, like the House of Representatives, you're going to take, you know, a map and make a map of Maryland and make the districts.
Yeah, if you had single member districts, I think it might be more likely that a libertarian somewhere might luck out and actually win.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We can basically, you know, when they come down to the proponents, we can present here's a libertarian party view of what districts ought to be. Because screwball Democrats.
Why do we have the three member districts? Because you can maintain more control.
The voters are chosen by the politicians run the first and opposite way. Now all of a sudden, you know, it's either solid Democrats, solid Republicans, and very few are basically even a cost up of a race, and therefore, you know, then some of the other issues that they help control is the real battle in the primary now. So now you have to make a decision. Do you want to affiliate with Democrat or Republican if you want to even have a say? And, you know, it comes to the issues, like, I think it's 26 states now. If you care less what party you're affiliated with, it don't ask you. All they want to know is where your name, your age, where you live, and we'll tell you where to go vote.
Uh-huh.
And so, to me, that I'd rather not even have to ask for where a party affiliation was. And you could decide that day whether you vote Democrat or Republican, You know, and I'm, you know, but I'm sure that the Democratic Party here just don't like that. I think because
I do think what happened is that what we've seen some evidence of in this, and I know there's some research been done on this, but I haven't read it myself, is that people move for political reasons, that they say, you know, Maryland is just getting more Democratic all the time, more leftist, and I'm just going to go to a place where I'm more comfortable. So you do see certain amount of coalescing and I believe it was Tim Russert who came up with this stupid idea of the Republican states are red states and the Democratic states are blue states. I mean, I can never remember that because it made it, you know, the Democratic states should be red states and the Republican states should be some other color. They don't have to be blue. But, you know, the red states get redder because, you know, people fed up with Maryland are more likely to, you know, I ought to move to Wyoming or Idaho or Alaska or some place where, you know, they actually do elect libertarians in Alaska, right? So, does it still do that?
So is New Hampshire. Alaska has in the past, and so is New Hampshire.
Just actually, one last thing I wanted to point out, it's the only way I think you're really going to have these candidates is we either seize control some kind of local show that either TV or radio that has a large listing where you can voice libertarian positions and viewpoints, get them out there and force the other parties to actually address that issue.
Well, I would say of the talk show host that Ron Smith is probably the most libertarian of any that's out there. I don't know whether he listens to other people, but much more inclined in that direction.
I just wanted to add real quick, red state, blue state, I think a libertarian state should be gold.
Gold!
In the state of Maryland, what we see is a group of a person who has tremendous leverage and power out of proportion to their size, and how did they accomplish it?
Out of proportion to their size? Well, obviously, rich corporations.
I'm saying political. Gay rights is a pretty good example of that. Would have to admit that
what are the estimates of the population? Is only about 5%. I mean, I've heard as high as 10%. I don't know.
In your opinion, how did they accomplish to get to the power that they have for a small group?
By being brighter, working smarter, aligned. They have aligned themselves with the progressive. I mean, if you look at the gays in the legislature, they would certainly be on the left wing of the Democratic Party, with the exception of the guy who just came out in the last 2 weeks, Peter Murphy, in Charles County, Heather Mazier from the Common Park. Maggie McIntosh, Madalino, Kaiser, Clippinger. I don't know where he is, but he's a former city Democrat, so he's not a conservative. And who's the one? Oh, and Mary Washington in the city. I mean, they're all together. That progressive wing of the party. So you would have to say that they have progressed in Maryland because Maryland has become more Democratic and leftist. I mean, the difference is I've been covering the legislature since 1975. I mean, I didn't do do it a lot back in the 70s, but what's missing now is the center. The center is largely gone. The moderate Republicans are mostly gone, and conservative Democrats are mostly gone. So there's no the ruling coalition used to be the center. You know, used to be those conservative Democrats and moderate Republicans. Lorenzo?
Glenn, I'd like to react to this comment. I think libertarians are actually the food center.
Well, that I understand where you're coming from, and that I can never remember the polls of that famous that chart, that bar chart. Right. Which would say, you know, the libertarians that are in the center. If you're from the left, libertarian looks like you're falling into the ditch. It doesn't look like you're in the center of the
We're both extremes.
I'm sorry, I forget your name. I know you ran for lieutenant governor. But the idea of coalescing around the anti-war. I mean, if all the libertarians did was to get us out of the war business, I mean that would be a huge achievement. We've been in the war business since 1941. I mean, you could argue that it goes back further than that, but in terms of large scale, I mean, continuous except for some dips, but continuously at war in order to maintain the empire. But it doesn't, it doesn't do much good for the average person. But they're persuaded that it's in our interest to do that. You know, we're so much safer now than we went into Iraq. You laugh because it's a ridiculous notion, but it's like conventional wisdom.
Yeah.
It's almost beyond absurd. To believe otherwise is you have to start from to argue with a person on that level is that what you believe is basically you bought into a crock of shit. And your belief structure is that you're somehow protected by this crock of shit. Well, that's a very uncomfortable place to be. It's really hard to challenge someone and to say. I was at an event in Las Vegas, and I heard a guy across the table who I knew very well. Said, "Well, I'm basically libertarian, but I think we really have to maintain the strong military." And I thought, "Well, in what way are you?" On what way are you a libertarian? Are you just a free market? Are you a free market guy? And if you're a free market, how does this military and how we use it fit into a free market framework? I mean, from almost any libertarian kind of argument, when you examine it, I mean, it's just fallacious. But I'm preaching to the small choir here. What can we do on the state level? Susan, we haven't heard from
suggesting you. Another issue. My heart is doing the anti-war thing, but it's not really a state issue. The other issue that you're bringing up about, other people might put down, well, Mike was bringing up a lot about, addressing the way we do, the way our political system is structured in Maryland and addressing some of the problems there. This is really boring to most people, including yours truly. One of the things I really was pleasant I liked about the Tea Party movement in Maryland is that they're actually getting people to address news and get interested in stuff like that and work on it. But how long that's going to last, I don't know. Because, it is a subject that most people, religious groups and stuff like that. They're not going to get mobilized about it. But I was surprised since I left for governor at the broad base of positive reaction, I mean, positive reaction from some of the diverse types of people that I got through the gun issue, the right to keep and bear arms issue. And I don't know how that can be capitalized, but I think if you're looking for something that will, you know, form a really broad-based coalition with a lot of people behind you, that has tremendous potential because it doesn't matter who it was. I'd throw that out there and people would just say, yes, I like that.
Right, and the idea of carrying weapons and concealed carrying and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah,
but that's another one where you run into such ideological belief that that taking weapons away from people would make them safer. I think that's a good one, and that's where
I think you can tie it in with the idea of this is the position held by the particularly now, anyway, by people who are real underdogs in society and the minority groups. They're the ones that really feel the need to be able to protect themselves because nobody else is going to protect them. You know, the police aren't coming to my neighborhood, you know, that kind of thing.
Kurt Anderson, there was a whole bunch of gun bills up last week, and the mayor of Baltimore City and Bielefeld and came down for, and that is to make apparently most of our handgun laws are based on are literally handgun laws and don't apply the same penalties for use of a long gun, of a shotgun, on crimes, and they are testifying on behalf of that. But I recall one delegate saying, well, you know, and there are places in the city where, you know, carrying a gun is a status thing, or it's something that you do for your own protection. And that certainly, you know, that might be an area where you could appeal to some people, because you get pretty fierce pushback. I think we've gone our limit here, and you have some kind of meeting to do after this.
Yeah.
So thank you for the opportunity to talk. I don't talk about my personal views like this. I just knew with this crowd I could say it and you wouldn't think I was completely fruitcake. Well, maybe I just bought one of the fruitcakes.
Strange.
That's
okay.
All right.
And see you.
All right.